Okay. Welcome to the Art of Meditation class 5. And I want to start with a meditation. So just to get us settled in, let's do this triangle breathing again. Starting with the right nostril. So right elbow and left palm, and then breathe in through the right and hold. For 4, and then hold and drop your head. 4, and then blow out to the left. For 4 counts, and continue. 4, 8 total. Keep going. Okay, let's wrap it up. So everyone, take a deep, slow breath in into the belly. And let's chant ah together. relax your head. Relax your neck and shoulders. Relax your upper arms and elbows and forearms. Wrists, hands, and fingers. Relax the upper back area and lower back. Relax your chest and solar plexus. Stomach, abdomen. Relax your pelvis, upper legs. Relax your knees, calves, lower legs. Relax your ankles and your feet and toes. Relax your whole body at once. And become aware of your breath as movement in the belly area. And then feel your whole body again as one thing. And notice the breath as well. At the same time, and just remain very still. You don't need to change anything. It's already perfect. And now become aware of the deep I. You can say I am to yourself silently if that helps you. It's a deep sense of self. The I am or the I connect to that deep part of yourself. It's the part that's always been there. And feel the warm glow of it when you connect to it. There's a sense that you are home again. And it's very peaceful and almost blissful. And stay with this warm glow. Maybe it's inside the body, or maybe it's now moved outside of the body a little bit. And it's perfect just as it is. It doesn't need to do anything or change anything. And you can stay with this for a little while. And you can notice that as you deepen into the eye, that everything else will go away. And you can go deeper into it now. And you can just abide here, just remain here. As the deep self, the deep I. And if a thought comes up about anything at all, you don't need to do anything about it. Just let it be there. And you can merge with it. So that it becomes a part of you. Or you can just witness it at the base of it. You can just be alongside the thought, at the base of the thought, not try to do anything with it, except notice that it's there. And then go back to the eye. And just sit with the eye. And notice that it's not a mental eye. It's the holistic eye. And it requires no effort. It just is as it is. And it uses no effort. And it doesn't need anything. It doesn't need to be something else. It doesn't need to get anything from anywhere. It has everything it needs. And if your attention wanders away from the eye, then you can just pull it back again. And you can say I or I am. And now place your attention back on the body and the breath. And slowly wiggle your fingers and toes and slowly come back into the room and open your eyes. My chalk got wet, so it's not really running very well. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I wanted to talk about this because, mostly because it was in the description of the course. And maybe it's not completely necessary, but it's also, I think, nice to know what these mean and how they relate and where they came from. So this is Dzogchen is a Tibetan word. Dzog means perfection. Chen means great. So Dzogchen means the great perfection. So what is the great perfection? That isn't that, I mean, is that interesting to know what that is? Mm-hmm. So the great perfection is connecting to the deep I. It's what you might call real meditation. And Dzogchen is taught in a certain way in certain traditions. So there really is no Dzogchen, there's only traditions of Dzogchen. And there are many Dzogchen meditation teachings that all sound a little bit different. But they all have one thing in common, which is that they're a pure being meditation. Just like what we just did. And this Advaita Vedanta is, I'm sure you know about, I'm sure you've heard this term before and you probably know what it is. But let's go over it anyway. Advaita, A is not. A means not. Dvaita, two. Or you could say not divided. So, and then Vedanta is just means that it came from the Upanishads, the ancient teachings of India. The last, they call it the last great body of teachings that came out of India, at least a couple thousand years ago. We don't really know for sure. So Advaita Vedanta is also doesn't really exist. It's just a term that we use to describe the teachings that came out of India that have this one thing in common, which is that they're non-dual teachings. And in Advaita Vedanta, they often teach a certain type of meditation, which is pure being meditation. So, like what we just did.
What do you mean by that? Like sitting and just being with yourself, that's it. That's what it means, pure being meditation?
Pure being is not like, for instance, Vipassana is focusing on the breath here,
yeah,
or here, and the body also, and it's developing your dharana and dhyana through that method, through that technique of going, you're using the body as the object of meditation,
mm-hmm,
right? And the breath. And that's based on the Anapanasati Sutta, which came out of the Theravadan teachings, the original, quote-unquote, original teachings of the Buddha, which were originally taught in Pali. That's why it's called Sutta instead of Sutra, which is the Sanskrit name. It just means it's a teaching from the Buddha, from Shakyamuni Buddha. So instead of going using the body as the focus, you use the awareness as the focus. So pure being basically means awareness, just awareness. And Zen, they call it Shikantaza, just sitting. It's just sitting and being aware. So all of these different traditions have this very, very similar teaching or method of discovering the self, what we really are. So the reason why I focused on these two is because I'm familiar with them firsthand, and I've practiced a lot with them, and they're basically the same. The one difference is that Dzogchen is, because it comes from the traditions of Buddhism, it has an element of emptiness. So, because Buddhism, they use the term emptiness a lot. And in Advaita Vedanta, not so much. And so, in Vedanta, yes, you could say that they teach the concept of emptiness, but they don't really call it that. So that's the main difference between the two. I don't really know if there's any other difference between them. So let's talk about this concept of emptiness and how it relates to this meditation. In the mystical traditions of Christianity, there's something called the via negativa. You heard of it? So the via negativa, as described by Meister Eckhart or St. Thomas Aquinas, was describing God in a way that the only way that was possible, which was to say what God is not, because the human mind cannot conceive of what God is, right? The human mind is limited, so we can't say what it is, but we can say what it's not. And by naming what it isn't, we come to a to a direct understanding or experience of what God is, right? So this is very similar, not exactly, but very similar to how emptiness is taught. So emptiness is from the tradition that I studied in Tibet, that came out of Tibet, is that everything is nothing exists. Nothing in the world exists inherently by itself. Everything exists in relationship to something else. There's always a subject-object relationship happening because of how the mind works. So there is no... So the way that it's taught is... to understand this concept of emptiness, we can then see how reality really is. So we understand it intellectually first, and then we eventually see it directly. We see that things are illusory, that the body is illusory, the eye is illusory, the world is a projection of the mind, and it exists. It all exists, but it doesn't exist inherently by itself. It only exists in relationship.
To yourself.
So if you're perceiving it, it exists in relationship to you. Yes. Yep. So this is how Dzogchen is often taught, as the mind resting on nothing or emptiness. So and we did a little bit of that in one of the earlier classes. And Advaita Vedanta is often the via negativa part of Advaita Vedanta is that they often do self-inquiry, which is another sort of form of this via negativa. Self-inquiry is inquiring, who am I? Which we also did a little bit of. So the ego is putting itself into question. It's saying, what am I? You know? And also the neti-neti practice that I told you about before, that you said you thought you made it up. This practice also is not this, right? So we're saying what we're not. We're not saying what we are. We're not pointing at something and saying I am that, which is also a method, but it's not this one. So the idea is behind the via negativa is that we're disidentifying with what we're not in order to see or experience what we are already. So this is this idea or this method which has been used in different traditions around the world, that's the commonality. That is the function of this approach. And you'll see it in pretty much every tradition of spirituality, some form or another. So I think it's important to go over it, and I relate to it very much in my own practice. And I also think that it's a really nice way to conceptualize the awakening process. So this is kind of wet, but let's see if it's worse. actually no, you don't need. Let's try it. This thing that I keep drawing all the time. I just really like this image. It's so useful. So, yeah. Okay, so the via negativa, right? So if we are this, already, and we feel like we're this, we're experiencing this, right? Every day we're experiencing this. But if we're already this and we're experiencing this, then if we let go of this, then what happens?
Then it manifests who you truly are, supposedly.
Yeah. But not manifests, it just appears, right? It's you can see it. You can see through the waters are calm, and you can see through the surface of the water, right? So this is also the idea behind the via negativa, is that if you just let go of what you think you are, or you could say if the awareness disidentifies with what it's not, then it automatically will become aware of itself, right? Because you're taking off the lens that is covering the what you see, what you're experiencing, the distortion, removing the distortion. And so that's the idea behind the via negativa, is you're learning to let go of the distortions. And the distortions don't seem like distortions, they're just what we experience on a daily basis. But when we go deeper, we will start to see that, we'll start to see the distortions, that they're the mind, that they are the mind. Does that make sense? So, what was I going to say? Oh, so, therefore, the awakening process is not a process of accumulation. We're not getting anywhere. We're not doing anything. We're not attaining anything. We're not adding anything on. We're taking away. Right? So that's why this whole idea of letting go is so important, and not having effort. So you could say that the process of awakening is the process of awareness, letting go of what it is not, and just being what it is, or seeing itself as what it is. So that you could simplify it that much. And if you just grok that part, that this is the awareness is just letting go of what it's not and being with what it is. It's as simple as that, the awakening process. So given that, meditation is then already existing. So we're just uncovering the meditation. We're not actually doing meditation. There's no ego, there's no personality called Douglas who sits and meditates. Impossible. There's only Douglas letting go of himself, his ideas of himself, or there is the awareness letting go of the idea of Douglas, mm-hmm. and just being itself, right? So I cannot meditate ever. I will never meditate. I will never become awakened or enlightened. Only the deep I can be itself. And so I have to let go, the Douglas, my personality, has to let go of who I think I am. Also the idea of meditating, me meditating, trying to meditate, to watch my mind, to try to get rid of those damn thoughts that keep coming back and back and back and again and again and again, over and over and over. And this, trying to get rid of this mind, you know, just over and over and over. But there's only meditation. So there's no one meditating. When you're in meditation, there is no one. No one, no personality, no person meditates. You get it? There's no one that can meditate. There's not a meditator. There is only meditation. And so this perspective on your practice will change your practice. And it will make it much easier and more direct, and you can stop trying and you can stop efforting, and you don't have to set your alarm clock for 7 a.m. or whenever you meditate and time yourself. Because when you understand this, you'll just want to do it. Because it's you. It's you being you. And so when you get a taste of it, you'll just want to sit there and enjoy what you are. It's pure love. It's just It's pure awareness, love, awareness, bliss, and it's what you are already. And what we are all it. I'm sure you've heard this before. Maybe not in this form, but... So, given that, then what do we do, right? We're here to learn how to develop our meditation, and, you know, to make a practice that is simple and easy and that will help us. That's the dilemma of the ego. The egoic mind always wants more, wants to learn more and more and more. And we can let it learn more if it wants, but we don't have to. We don't have to get caught up in that. We can just sit and be, let the awareness just be itself. Let the awareness let go of the concept of the person or of whatever is happening, the circumstances. So, what's it going to say? Oh, yeah. Please don't take my word for it. I don't want you to believe anything I say as ultimate truth. I really want you to just go and explore this way of meditation and see what happens, you know. See how that will change things, knowing that you are the awareness and just being with what you are, the deep I. The deep I is an Eckhart Tolleism. It's not my term, but I think it's really describes it well, because it's not this I, it's the deep I. It's not localized either. It's not, it doesn't exist in a place. It's not in the body. It's holistic, right? So any questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just wondering why you talk about the purpose of personality, because we have the personality and the ego and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is the time to open it, but it was just, I totally understand the idea of shading the personality, but I think it would be, somehow easier for me to locate it inside, in when I understand the purpose of it, like in those theories or ways.
Yeah. What do I think the personality is for?
Yes, what do you think? What the Dzogchen or Vajrayana brings with it?
I don't really relate to how the teachings that I've been exposed to conceptualize the personality.
Mm-hmm.
Buddhism is not interested in the personality. Traditions of Buddhism are not really interested in the personality. it's more of, from my perspective, it's more of an obstacle. However, it's necessary to explore what we're here to explore. So the personality comes from the identification of awareness with the body. The body is a thought as well as the mind. We're here to experience something, I think we're here to explore obstruction, limitation, and see what that's like. Because there's, as John Friedlander would say, exploring obstruction gives us richness and gives us something that we wouldn't have been able to experience otherwise. So possibly the self or God or source or whatever you want to call it decided to split itself off into entities that are individual entities that have personalities in order to experience itself in a different way, like a fractal, like so that individuated form is a fractal of, it's made of the same stuff, like a ray of the sun, right? Or a wave from the ocean. So, go ahead.
If God did that, imagining, that God wants to break itself into pieces to experience existence?
Yeah.
Okay. Why then it creates suffering? And why should we go against that will? Just asking, I'm not defending
it. It's a great question, yeah.
Because
it's a great question.
We want to get out of that.
Yes, we want to get out of it.
I'm not saying we do. I do.
Yeah, yes. Because, yeah, right.
Okay, came to a point. So, and I know it exists.
Suffering.
I know that reality of feeling love and bliss, I know it's real. I'm sure it's real. And, but the thing is, yeah, because that idea has been with me for a long time. I did a course about the universe and the story of the universe, and it was really beautiful to get into that world of possibility, of philosophical possibility. But yeah, well, if God would do that, then why do we suffer with that?
But it's not God who created suffering, it's us who create this.
Yes.
But we are God.
We are God.
We are God.
Yeah, but we are in the, going back to persona. We use our persona to deal with things of the world. And we feel we crave love, we crave pleasure, and we run away from pain. And all of this game between aversion and attraction or craving creates suffering. It's in the realm of persona. So when we can transcend that and no longer be so attached to the persona or to the needs, because I think the persona is important in this material realm, because we need to go off with our lives, right? We live in society, we go to the supermarket, we need to look after our body, our health. So persona somehow allow us to do that, right? Because we go away, we feel fear, we want safety, all these things that we have to deal with material world. But
that was the
once,
point.
Huh?
That was the point of the whole experience.
She's talking about the macro of it, though. Why did God create all of that?
But God is something that some people believe in, the creator.
No, okay.
Yeah,
whatever created it. We're not talking about belief here. We're talking about the question of why did whatever created us make a person out. So your question is that the
yeah,
question?
It's like we aim to go back or to
right.
to go to this source
mm-hmm.
and to be this source
yeah.
and to
yeah.
but we
so then why have a personality?
But we were born, you know, when my daughter was born, I was so into the realms of yoga and the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta, and I told myself, okay, now we have a new soul here. Why? I mean, and I looked at all her journey of becoming herself,
yeah.
imprinting her own prints of her own way, of her own soul. It was fascinating for me.
Yeah.
To discover that we were, I mean, this is the way that we are in this world, and
yeah.
I thought maybe I can save it from her somehow, so she can go straight away to this house.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
she has to go through
yeah.
all this way of
yeah, yeah.
being
right.
this and being that, and then to shed it off. I mean,
right, but
it's coming from this.
Yeah. So.
And then I discover I cannot do it.
Yeah.
It's very innocent.
Yeah. yeah.
But the existence in this realm, in this world, is itself the result. I mean, that's what I think it's logic according with the Buddhist tradition. And I think for me, I think it's truth. I see logic in this, that the body itself that we bring into this world is karma. So we bring this craving for something so automatic and so rooted in this being somehow that we crave for existence, for pleasure, and running away from aversion. So it's so rooted, this mechanism of being this, that then we discover, okay, so there's a way out of this. Otherwise we go in this loop, constantly creating more aversion and more craving
mm-hmm.
and more suffering, right? One way of going out of it is practicing meditation to purify the mind in ways that when we go, we are we're no longer addicted to this thing of becoming, the running up after pleasure and running away from suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we have the mind purified, we go into this state of the unified field of the I, the deep I, and no longer need, or if we choose to come back as a bodhisattva to help other people who are in this loop of suffering, right, of aversion, of and wanting pleasure. Because in life, if we see, we're always wanting things that bring us pleasure, and we're always wanting, running away from things that bring us suffering, right? So I don't personally feel that we were created, but it's part of this subtle mind that is really, really addicted to become, to carry on this patterns of being, but that's how I feel that it is. No, it's not a belief, but it's something that I experience. So
I don't think that we can really know.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in a being in a human body with a mind. I don't think we can know the answer to these questions, but we can take a guess.
It's fun.
It's fun. My guess is that it's interesting. It's a game. It's play. It's lila, like lila. The term lila, you know, is divine play. I think it's divine play. Going in, like they say, the light in, like a person who wants who. Is in the shade, and then they go out into the sun, and then they come back and say, oh, like, how's the story go? I forget, but it's like, oh, the shade, like, you know, oh, like, for the first time, like, oh, I'm back in the shade, thank God, you know, like, but they actually went out into to experience what it was like to not be in the shade, To Plato, what is that experience?
Plato cave, you mean?
Huh?
Plato cave. Is that what you mean?
The story. I don't know where I heard this
Plato
story.
And the cave. Yeah.
No,
no.
No, it's not Plato's cave. It's some Vedanta story. But anyway, it's this whatever created us, source or whatever you want to call it, is doing divine play. It's saying, okay, I'm gonna go play hide and go seek with myself and see what happens. Like, what happens if I cut off the awareness of myself in a certain part of myself, and that being then has to evolve back and suffer in the process to get back to what it was, and then it has all these rich experiences in it, and it goes into this the one dimension, and then two dimensions, and then three dimensions, and it goes all the way up to, you know, all, you know, goes all through all of these different layers of reality of dimensions and experiences as bodies and angelic beings and spirit forms and who knows what, you know, infinite shapes and sizes and personalities or alien beings or whatever, rocks, trees, you know. So it just, that's my idea. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
But you know, in the deep states of meditation, you have flashes, glimpses of what is not, and what is.
Right, but.
Yeah.
And then
who knows?
Peace, right?
Who knows what that is, you know? It would be, for me to have an experience in meditation and come out of it and say, it's like this, would be pure arrogance. Because everyone's experience is different if you're in a human body, unless you are, you know, like, in direct connection with the self, which when that happens, then apparently there's no more learning after that. That direct experience, then you go on the escalator up, and there's no more messing about with being with confusion and the rest. So even those experiences, though, direct perception of emptiness is what they call it in traditions of Buddhism. Even in those, they describe it differently. Oh, well, and then they come out and they say, oh, well, you're going to have this experience and that experience and that experience. It's going to go blah, 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 blah. And then someone else says, no, I experienced it directly and this is what happened. So, you know, I saw these beings. I saw Jesus. And Jesus said to me, blah, blah, blah. And then, or I saw Avalokiteshvara. You know, the thousand-armed bodhisattva, and he told me this. Or I saw a big bearded man in a white coat, and he was very tall, and he told me about my life, and, you know, like, it's all an individuated perception, you know? That's all we can do. All we can do is have our individuated, subjective perception, even in deep states of meditation and so-called direct experience with the divine. So, and I do believe we have a direct experience of the divine, and when that, so that's another topic. But anyway, it's still personal. It still has the personality in it, because whenever we try to conceptualize it or speak about it, it always goes through the personality.
It's always,
right?
An experience, yes.
It's an experience.
Yes, an experience is
exactly
because it goes away.
Right, and so when the body goes away and you're in another form, then that personality or whatever it is will describe it maybe in another way. You know, like, so it's all conceptual. It's all conceptual. If we're in a body and we're talking about anything, it's conceptual, right? It has to be. Because we're working through the ego. I'm, you know, like we're talking because we have egos. It's useful. Personality is incredibly useful right? We can have this experience, we can all communicate, and I think that's what it's for, you know? It's to have this
but
experience.
But there are really, there are different states of mind, because for example, if I come now to you and hit you, you're going to say, ouch! But if you've been meditating or doing martial arts, your mind apprehends the pain in a total different way.
Right, yeah.
You
can,
don't react
yeah.
as much because you are in a different
it's
perception.
True. Yeah,
you're
yeah.
not reacting.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's true.
I don't know why I said that. I don't know why you
but
said
your
something.
Experience depends on your.
Yeah, yeah. So there's really different
your
states
state
of
mind.
Mind.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes,
so
also that.
So depending on the states of mind, you
right.
apprehend the experience in a different way.
Also, yes. So the personality is a filter. And
mm-hmm.
also, exactly, you're right. Yeah, so the state of mind that's being experienced will change, the personality
mm-hmm.
will whatever, perceive something differently and or explain it differently or whatever. So anyway, great questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
So
you started.
I know, these are really great. These are really great questions. Yeah. So let's end here and then also, I wanted to talk about homework, but maybe we can talk about that next time, what your experience, what the last homework was. And this time, if you want to continue that, if you liked that worldview practice, please continue it. If you didn't like it, then whatever, just let it go. And this week, I want you to just sit with the deep eye. Whenever it feels right. So just follow your intuition. It doesn't have to be when you wake up or when you go to bed. It could be in the middle of the day. It could be when you're sitting on the couch doing whatever. It could be, yeah, whenever. I mean, it might not be so easy when you're doing a task or working or something like that. So maybe when you're in a quiet spot somewhere, go into the deep eye and just be with it. And do it for as long as you desire and see what happens. And if you can't do that every day for a little bit, but you don't need to time yourself. It's not a chore. If you miss a day, it's fine. Don't worry. There's none of this I have to business. No guilt, no shame, nothing like that. No effort, none of that. We're not doing that at all. It's not what this is about. This is just about you following your intuition into the deep eye and then just sitting with it and see what happens. Experiencing that deeper and deeper. And if you want, you can do it all day long. You can do it for like 10 seconds.
Even if we won't.
All day long. When you find a moment, you can just find 10 seconds and you can do it. Just see what happens. Just go into it. So anyway. Yeah. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right.